Welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship Sunday service. My name is Hannah Franco Isaacs. I use the pronouns she and her, and it is my great privilege to serve as your Director of Religious Education. I am joined this morning by the Reverend Dr. Wayne Arneson. Reverend Arneson is a Unitarian Universalist minister from Charlottesville, Virginia. He retired in 2016 after a 40-year career in parish ministry and denominational service. He began doing dream work in seminary in 1974 and has sustained an interest in his personal dreams and how dreams have changed the world ever since. I want to share with you that many parts of our service today were recorded before the events of Wednesday, January 6th. We know that many of us are still reeling from these violent acts, and we need to express our feelings about them. We invite you to settle in, experience worship, think, and join us for coffee hour today at 11:30 to share your joys, your sorrows, your fears, and your hopes. We invite you to come be in community with one another. If you're visiting and didn't receive the order of service or coffee hour information, please email our congregational administrator or visit our website. Whoever you are, wherever you are in this moment, we want you to know that you are welcome here. We are glad that you are with us today to be a part of this virtual community of compassion and imagination. Welcome.
I like this chalice for Unitarian Universalism. This is our faith, a faith that guides us toward the loving, beloved community that we dream of in our hearts. I offer these words of calming and blessing after this hard week of insurrection that has led to deep uncertainty about the future of our country that we have held so beloved in our hearts and still do and have grand and hopeful wishes for, because this is where our beloved people live and where our beloved land is. To all that is chaotic in you, let there come silence. Let there be a calming of the clamoring, a stillness of the voices that have laid their claim on you, that have made their home in you, that go with you even to the holy places, that will not let you rest, will not let you hear your life with wholeness, or feel the grace that fashioned you. Let what distracts you cease. Let that what divides you cease. Let there come an end to what diminishes and demeans, and let depart all that keeps you in its cage. Let there be an opening in the quiet that lies beneath the chaos, where you find the peace you did not think possible, and see what shimmers within the storm.
We are going to keep on moving forward. We're going to keep on loving boldly. We're going to keep on building our faith community to be a more welcoming, more loving, and more just place. I look forward to doing that work together with you.
It's a great pleasure to be able to be with you today to share and worship. This is a quiet time in our service when I invite you to join minds and hearts together in a spirit of meditation and prayer. Spirit of life, we are grateful for this day, and even though we are apart, we give thanks for the opportunities for reunion, for reflection, and for renewal, which this service brings. We give thanks for the community of love and support, friendship and fun, inspiration and invitation that exists here in this congregation. We give thanks for opportunities that it offers us to serve, for the ways that the church calls us out of our habits and patterns, our fears and uncertainties, our cowardice and our complacency, calls us towards the fully awake and accountable human beings we can become. With a moment of silent remembrance now, we would hold in our hearts today all those in our communities and in our families who are ill, in body, in mind, or spirit, and especially those who are suffering from COVID-19 illnesses with an uncertain road ahead. In silence, we call them to mind and we wish them healing and recovery in the days ahead. May the community we share and the service that we offer in years to come sustain and surpass that which we have known in years past. Amen. One night last week, it was the night before I started to write this sermon, in fact, I had a dream. Among the many things that happened in the dream, there was one image that I particularly retained. I was sitting in a group of five Unitarian Universalists in a room, in a meeting, and I was taking notes. Now, this is something that I do all the time, and I've done most of my life. It's very ordinary. So I'm keeping track of the meeting and writing the notes, and I happen to look up and over across the housetops, out the window, a block away, I see an enormous dinosaur, a brontosaurus in skeleton form being paraded down the street. "You see that?" I ask my friends. And, oh yeah, says one, "they're just practicing making the dinosaur puppet work for the festival parade tomorrow." Now, what does that dream mean? Could it have something to do with the fact that as an increasingly old white guy, I am sometimes the dinosaur in the room at UU meetings? Why is it important for the dinosaur to be in the festival parade? Maybe I had this dream because of the commercial I saw on television the night before that showed kids touring through a museum of natural history. Maybe it's all of the above. I don't know. I'm still thinking about it. But now that I've told it to you, you are thinking about it too. And what if it was your dream? What would it mean to you? The first person that I ever heard ask me that question was my late friend, the Reverend Jeremy Taylor, who for many years taught a class at Star King School for the Ministry in Berkeley on dream work for seminarians. And early on in his career as a pioneer in dream work for personal growth and collective wisdom, Jeremy wrote the poem about doing dream work in groups that Hannah offered us as our reading this morning. Jeremy's key question for group dream work, what if it was your dream, opened a door for me that has led me down what Sigmund Freud called the royal road to the unconscious. So let's travel down that road together in this sermon today and meet some of the guides and the signposts. This month in worship, you are exploring imagination together. And I would say that imagination can rightfully be called conscious dreaming. My Merriam-Webster dictionary defines imagination as the act or power of forming a mental image of something not present to the senses or never before wholly perceived in reality. If we trust this definition, the only difference between imagining and dreaming is that we do the first when we are awake and the second when we are asleep. Perhaps there's another difference as well. Many people trust and affirm imagination because it's something we can try to do consciously, something we think we control. But those same people might dismiss dreaming as something that's as important as imagination because it seems to happen beyond our control to create or to retain. This is understandable, I suppose, because an amazing number of people will say that they never dream or they never remember their dreams. So it's not something they have any interest in or place any stock in. It is easy to dismiss dreams in the same way that Dickens' old Ebenezer Scrooge dismissed his visions of the Christmas ghosts as, quote, an undigested bit of beef, a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese, a fragment of underdone potato. However, everyone dreams. In fact, the scientific consensus is that dreaming is necessary for mental health. Furthermore, your dreams are like anything else in this world to which we give our attention. Attention is rewarded with knowledge and insight. If you try to pay attention to your dreams, they will pay attention to you. When we are awake and conscious, we can make a decision to try to imagine something as an act of will. Before we go to sleep, it's equally possible to set an intention. An intention that if I wake up in the night, I will try to capture an image, at least one image from a dream I was having. Now, it may not happen the first time you try, but if you're consistent in setting that intention every night for a week, I'm confident you will retain at least one dream image. And if you really want to try this out, consider having a pen and paper at your bedside for when you wake with a dream and try writing down just a key word, even if you're half asleep and you're going back to sleep. It will help you get back to the dream in the morning. All well and good, you might say, but why bother? If I wake up to roll over or use the bathroom, I sometimes have trouble going back to sleep. And trying to capture an image or write down a word from my dream just wakes me up all the more. You know, I need my sleep. What's in it for me? I'm not all that introspective. I'm not in therapy. Well, you might be surprised at what attention to your dreams can bring up. There are some amazing stories of dreams that changed people's lives or changed the world. And these stories go back thousands of years in human history. They're built even into the scriptures of the world religions. There are about a dozen stories or clusters of stories about important dreams in the Bible. And many of them appear in the ancient Hebrew Bible. Often these dreams contain warnings, which the authors interpreted as being warnings from God about a danger that is about to happen. And dreamers today continue to report that they have interpreted their dreams as warnings and changed their minds about an airline reservation or a financial investment or a relationship. Many of the dream stories in the New Testament cluster around the birth of Jesus and are dreams of reassurance or warning to Mary and Joseph. For me, the most interesting and little-known dream in the New Testament is that of Pontius Pilate's wife, who in Matthew 27 sends a message to her husband just as he is about to preside over the trial of Jesus, telling Pilate to have nothing to do with that trial of this righteous man, because the previous night she had suffered greatly in a dream because of him. Well, this story points to another way that dreams can change lives, by bringing forward knowledge or understandings that you already have but have suppressed or ignored. This is the power of dreams that can be explored in various kinds of therapies and dream-based spiritual practices. Your dreams can not only warn of dangers or reveal information or feelings that you have suppressed, they can be a source of healing and comfort. I feel warm and happy on those days when I wake up from a dream in which, for example, my deceased parents were characters. It can be lovely to be with them in dream world, even when the settings are bizarre, like in a recent dream I had that I entitled My Mom on the Moon. Dreams that can change individual lives can often change the world as well. Now, I presume that everyone listening to this sermon today is wearing an article of clothing that was stitched together using some kind of sewing machine. You have that article of clothing and the huge variety of clothing options available to you today, all because of a dream. In 1837, Elias Howe was an 18-year-old working in a textile mill in Lowell, Massachusetts. Now, there was a financial panic that year, and Howe lost his job, so he went to work in a machine shop where he became fascinated with the problem of mechanical sewing. A French inventor had already devised a sewing machine that could duplicate human hand sewing motions to create a simple chain stitch, but the Guild of Tailors resisted its use and even in 1831, rioted and destroyed the factory where these machines were being made. Well, Howe thought that the complex motions of human arms and hands and fingers were far too difficult to emulate efficiently with a machine. Rather than copy that, he wanted to use established machine techniques, but he couldn't come up with the technological innovation that would make that possible until one night he had a dream. In his dream, Howe had been captured by cannibals. They were planning to eat him, and they were preparing to boil him in a pot of water atop a blazing fire as they stood around him waving their spears. Despite the terror he experienced in the dream, Howe woke up with one strange thing about these cannibals as an image embedded in his mind. The spears they were waving at him had holes in their points. Now, what could that mean? Holes in their points. Holes in their points, of course. That's it. Howe returned to his mechanical sewing machines and moved the eye of the needle to the point and devised a shuttle to move a second thread through the loop created by the needle. And this created a tight lock stitch that was stronger than a mechanical chain stitch. At its first public demonstration in 1845, Howe's machine was able to outsew five humans. The story of Elias Howe reminds us of the link between dreams and imagination. It's human creativity. It was in the definition of imagination we heard earlier, the perception of something never before seen in reality. People in so many fields of human endeavor, artists, inventors, engineers, writers, scientists, they count on their creativity to bring into being objects and technologies and stories that have never before been seen. But hardly anyone knows where this creativity comes from. Is it simply the infinite possibilities of neural synapses connecting in novel ways that bring forth things never seen before? Or does it have something to do with tapping into the collective unconscious described by Carl Jung, another scholar of dreams? Whatever it is, we know that every night when we sleep, our creative minds are at work, bringing forward stories and experiences and realities that we've never experienced before. Many of us, whether we remember our dreams or not, are familiar with that creative liminal state between waking and sleeping that occurs just after we go to bed or just when we're waking up or maybe at nap time. The time when we're letting go of our linear rational mind is the time when many creative ideas or insights are generated. This liminal state is also described by some of the scholars and practitioners of dream work as possible within a dream state. It's called lucid dreaming, the ability to engage consciously in familiar ways with the world within your dream. Dream induction is another variation on lucid dreaming. Dream induction describes a process of meditating or praying about an issue in your life before sleep and asking for or inducing a dream about that issue from conscious life for which you'd like some guidance. Now, if I'm getting a little too esoteric here in my enthusiasm for describing the possibilities of dream interacting with imagination, maybe we should step back a minute and talk about a different way that we use the word dream quite often in normal discourse as a synonym or a substitute for the word imagination. When we want to convey an image of a hoped-for future, somehow imagining just seems too clinical a way to describe the vision you have for a possibility that could come to pass, but that relies on conscious human effort and moral courage. So we call it a dream instead. Next weekend, as we celebrate the life of Martin Luther King Jr., you're going to hear different media outlets over and over again play the lines from his speech at the March on Washington. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. Is that kind of dream the same thing that we've been talking about? Well, absolutely, if we understand the connection between imagination and dreaming. To picture in your mind an object or event or an action or even a world that is different than what we have now is an act of imagination, but when it seems unlikely that this world could ever come to be, that act of imagination becomes a dream. When the systems and assumptions and power brokers all seem lined up against the possibility that the world you imagine could ever come to pass, then you are a dreamer in the sense that Dr. King was a dreamer, in the sense that hundreds of thousands of aspiring future citizens of this country brought here by their parents are dreamers. You know, one of my favorite genres of fiction is science fiction. And recently I've been inspired by several writers of Afrofuturism, science fiction written by Black authors who usually set their stories in a future that has long forgotten or that never contained the all-encompassing American trauma of slavery and all of the post-traumatic distress that people of color endure as a result of it. Afrofuturism is another kind of dreaming, a dreamscape translated into written story in which the author lucidly dreams a different way of being for her community. If this sermonic excursion into dreams and dreaming has whetted your imagination for doing your own personal dream work, alone or with a partner, here's a few concluding basic tips to remember to help you along the way on this royal road to the unconscious. First, a dream always has multiple meanings. If you pursue your first flash of insight about a dream, never believe this is the only possible wisdom a dream has for you. Second, a dream can have meaning for more people than the dreamer. If you are sharing dreams with someone else and offering your impressions, remember Jeremy Taylor's question, what if this was your dream? Maybe your insight will be meaningful to a person telling you about their dream, and maybe not, but you still have received a gift from that person's dream for your own life. Thirdly, trust in fragments and what we call tingles. My huge puppet dinosaur skeleton from the dream I told you about at the beginning of this sermon was only one fragment of a much longer dream, but when I awoke, this was the image that passed the tingle test and survived well into my waking life. Sometimes a dream fragment is like that. It's the first bone you come across as you dig up from your sleeping, unconscious but always conscious mind and put together a picture of what happened in your dream, and it enables you to reconstruct the entire skeleton of the dream and imagine how it lives in you again. Well, let me leave you today with one last thought from my dream teacher, Jeremy Taylor, who said, dreaming is a doorway open to all, to the unexplored possibilities of human creativity. And each of us needs to make use of the many resources that we have if we are to have any hope of solving our pressing individual and collective problems. May it be so.
Give me a mighty oak to hold my confusion. Give me a desert to hold my fears. Give me a sunset to hold my wonder. Give me an ocean to hold my tears. Now I am seem so strange, it would dishonor those who came before us. So lift me up now to the light of change. Yes, lift me up to the light.
As we extinguish the chalice, marking the end of our time together, let us resolve to carry within us the warm glow of its flame for all it holds as we make our way through the coming week. May we meet again in a spirit of peace, love, compassion, and health.